He brought in a Chinese religious specialist and an Indian religious specialist, and he set them up in a mode of discourse that would lead eventually to a conclusion about which variety of Buddhism would be best, as it were, for the Tibetan culture. Representing the Chinese side was a meditation master whose name was simply Mahayana, who advocated a practice of sudden awakening, like the practice of sudden awakening that we'll discuss when we talk about the Chan and Zen traditions. Representing the Indian side was a disciple of Shantarakshatan whose name was Kamala Shila, who advocated a practice of gradual awakening, of slowly working yourself through the stages of the bodhisattva path before you come eventually to the experience of Buddhahood. According to the Tibetan tradition, the king decided in favor of the Indian party and permanently oriented the Tibetan tradition toward India. So this was another watershed in Tibetan history when a Tibetan king chose Indian Buddhism as the source of the Tibetan tradition. Now you might, after the reign of Trisong Detsen, another king appeared whose name was Lang Dharma, who attempted to persecute Buddhism. He attempted to stamp out the practice of Buddhism in central Tibet. Now, he was not terribly successful in this. He was eventually assassinated, and the line of the Tibetan kings was broken. But the practice of Buddhism in Tibet went into eclipse. So there was no active support of the Tibetan monasteries and no active practice of Buddhism, at least in that organized way that we would associate with the monastic tradition. Now, you might well ask, in the case of Lang Dharma and his attempt to stamp out the practice of Buddhism in Tibet, where his opposition came from. Why would a king appear in this line of Tibetan kings after so much effort had gone into establishing Buddhism? Why would a king appear who would attempt to reverse that process and eliminate Buddhism from Tibetan culture? One traditional answer to this question would be to say that it came from the influence of an indigenous religious tradition found in traditional Tibet and known by the name of Bön, B-O-N, the Bön tradition. Bön is sometimes called the indigenous shamanism of Tibet, and its practices often involve a very conscious inversion of Buddhist practices. From a Buddhist point of view, it often seems quite challenging and dangerous. For example, when a Bönpo, a practitioner of Bön, goes to a stupa, instead of walking around it to the left so that the right shoulder is kept always toward the holiest place in the stupa, a Bönpo goes around a stupa to the right. So that the direction of Buddhist practices often is inverted in the practice of Bön. Buddhists find this challenging and a little bit strange, but from the point of view of Bön, this tradition represents the practice of Tibetan religion as it existed in Tibet before the coming of Buddhism. Very interesting claim. The Bön tradition traces its origin to a figure named Shenrab, who is called by Bön a Buddha, using the Tibetan name for a Buddha, Sangye. Like Shakyamuni, he has achieved this experience of awakening. But instead of coming from India to the south of Tibet, he comes from a region known as Tazik to the west of Tibet. Tazik is a region that I think we can loosely associate with Persia. Like Buddhism, the Bön tradition developed an elaborate canon of scripture, and many of the teachings in this canon are very close to the teachings found in Tibetan Buddhist texts. One text, for example, describes emptiness in a way that would be quite familiar to us from the other discussions we've had of this important doctrine. The elements of existence are like a dream or a mirage, it says. Their sole validity is their essential vacuity or their emptiness.